Today on The Balanced Word from Dave Rolfe.
When we go against what God tells us, when we just do what we want to do because we want to do it, there is a line that can be crossed. And we can never just decide that, I think I'm totally safe. You see people even who God uses in great ways, and they're doing things that are just disrespectful and dishonoring to God, and they continue to be that way, and they think, hey, God's using me, so therefore I'm special to him. And then all of a sudden, sometimes in a day, something happens, a mistake is made where they go a little too far, and boom, it's all over.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my instrument I play, pick up my voice, let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
There are people all around the world involved in all sorts of evil behavior, and you might be tempted to think they're getting away with it. But as we'll learn today on The Balanced Word, we can cross a line, go too far, and you can be sure God will step in and hold us accountable. Pastor Dave Rolfe is going through the Bible, highlighting various Bible stories. Today, Belshazzar is about to go through a rather frightful experience. He sees a handwriting on a wall, and through it all, we learn some valuable lessons. Here's Pastor Dave to draw them out for us from today's Bible story.
Right now, let's turn to Daniel chapter 5, the fifth chapter of Daniel. This year, we're going through the Old Testament and pulling out particular stories from the Old Testament. Daniel chapter 5 is one of the coolest, weirdest stories in the Bible. And it's the story from which we get the expression, the handwriting is on the wall. Maybe you've heard that expression, but you don't know where it came from. It came from Daniel chapter 5. And so we'll look at this story. Now, to put it into historical perspective, if you've been with us, you know that the book of Ezekiel and Daniel, these happened during what we call the Babylonian captivity. The children of Israel had been conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, and most of the people had been taken captive up north to Babylon. And in the meantime, they had destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, and they were converting Jews into Babylonians, gave them Babylonian names, taught them the culture, and utilized them in the whole processing of Babylonian culture. And so Daniel, who wrote the book of Daniel, was one of the first people to be taken captive into Babylon. He became a leader in Babylon. As you go through the book of Daniel, you see God using him in these different ways. Well, when we get to chapter 5, it's been a while, and Daniel, who at one point under Nebuchadnezzar was basically running the place, he was basically equivalent to being number two in the kingdom. Well, Nebuchadnezzar had died by this time. Nebuchadnezzar's son, Nabonidus, took over, but Nabonidus was really a flake. And so Nabonidus, even though he was the ruler, he was off traveling all the time, seeing the world. And so his son, Belshazzar, had become co-regent. So now you have two guys over the kingdom. One of them, Nabonidus, is out enjoying a semi-retirement early. And Belshazzar was there sort of running the country. It's why when Belshazzar promises to make someone third in the kingdom, the reason he does that is we know historically that he was technically second in the kingdom. But they were enjoying the fruits of everything that Belshazzar's most likely grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, had accomplished. And so they're just spending the money that he had accumulated from all of his major victories and everything. So as we come to chapter 5, Belshazzar is ruling. He's reigning there in Babylon. So as you begin to read the story, you see that Belshazzar decided to have a party. And as he's throwing the party, you can see in chapter 1, he made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords, his deputies, and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. And while he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem. Now, when Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Israel, and Jerusalem in particular, he went and ransacked the temple. The temple was full of beautiful gold goblets and bowls and dishes and utensils that they would use in the worship of God. He took those and then just put them in storage. So at this point, Belshazzar goes, hey, remember all those holy dishes? Let's get them out here and let's drink from them. And so as you read through there, he passes out these sacred utensils, and they just began to drink from them as they're getting drunk, as they're partying and just enjoying themselves and acting like fools. They're doing it with these dishes that were holy. And not only that, it said that they were drinking a toast to all of their gods. He says, as they would drink from them, they praise the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. Every god they can come up with, they're like, here's to the god of stone. And, they would drink with these holy dishes. All of a sudden, something happened that really messed up the party. Because suddenly on the wall in plaster is a hand. I don't know how big the hand was, but he saw the hand, and the hand was writing something. And you couldn't see what it was writing because the hand was in the way. The hand wasn't attached to an arm or a body or a person. It's just a hand. And it really freaked out Belshazzar. He was probably pretty drunk at this point too. But when he saw that hand, it shook him up. And we see as you read down here, the king's countenance, verse 6, changed. His whole mood sobered up. And his thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his hips were loosened, or as the King James says, his loins were loosened, and his knees knocked against each other. Now, saying that the joints of his hips were loosened is a nice euphemistic way of saying this. What it really means is he had to put on another toga after this. he spoiled his pants, and his knees were knocking, and he's freaking out. He had never seen anything like it. Wow, this is like a hallucination that I've never experienced. And he's freaking out. And so as you read on in the story, he called for all of his wise men, all the magicians. In those days, they always would pick people who seemed to have insight or who, the whole practice of magic was very well developed in those times. These are some of the times when it really developed here and over in Egypt as well. And so he called all these magicians and everybody together. He got, David Blaine, David Copperfield, and all them. And he's like, look at the hand on the wall. Did you guys notice? And they're like, whoa, can you make it go away? And they couldn't. And so he became more and more disturbed and upset by the thought of his party being, completely derailed by him embarrassing himself in front of everyone. And by this hand still being there. And so as he was upset, down in verse 10, it says, the queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. Now this probably wasn't his wife, the queen, because he's already said his wives and concubines were there with him in the party. So this was probably the queen mother. It could have been the wife of his father, Nabonidus. It could have possibly been one of the children of Nebuchadnezzar, or even Nebuchadnezzar's wife. It wasn't that many years had gone by since Nebuchadnezzar had died. So, but the queen mother, she was somebody who had some experience in the history that had gone on before. She heard that he was upset. He was offering third place in the kingdom to anybody who could solve this. And so she came and she said, hey, don't freak out. This is going to be okay. She said, there is a guy in your kingdom who's been around a while. And he is a guy in whom is the Spirit of God. And in the past with Nebuchadnezzar, he was able to interpret his dreams. He was able to solve and untangle anything that was tangled. So let's get this guy Daniel, whose Babylonian name is Belteshazzar, and let's bring him up here, and I'm sure he can solve this thing. So as you read down through the story, he goes, great, find this guy. Daniel had probably come into sort of retirement. I mean, he was still there, he's living, he maybe knew what was going on, but when Nebuchadnezzar had died, probably that was his connection in the government, and so his position was less prominent. So when all of the other magicians and everybody came in, they hadn't called him in because he had already kind of hung it up. But he comes before Belshazzar, and Belshazzar says, so is it true that you're a guy that can figure out secrets, that you can untangle knots, that you can interpret visions and dreams? Tell me what this hand floating in the air means. And so Daniel began to just lay out for him. Oh, and he told Daniel, hey, if you can tell me what this means, then you will be third in the kingdom. I'll give my robe to you. I'll put a ring on your hand. You'll be the third most important guy in this kingdom. Well, Daniel had already at one point been the second most important guy in the kingdom, so that wasn't a big deal to him. But materialism meant nothing to Daniel. And so Daniel said, look, I don't want your stuff. Take your gifts and give them to someone else. But I will tell you what this means. And then he began to give Belshazzar a history lesson. Now, there's something else here that's interesting. The name Belshazzar, as this king had, and Daniel's Babylonian name, which was Belteshazzar, they're the same name. It's just a slightly different form. It wasn't a very common name. It's a name that means keeper of the secrets of Baal. And somebody who was really smart would have had a name like that. Obviously, King Belshazzar wasn't smart. He was just a lush. My theory is that he was actually named after Daniel. If you think about the timing of it and everything, it would make sense that during Daniel's heyday was probably when Belshazzar was born. But he apparently didn't really know anything about his history. So Daniel began to lecture him. And he said, your father, and by father it doesn't mean literally father, it means your forefather. So it could be his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever. You're somebody you're descended from. There was a time when he established this great kingdom of Babylon. And he did it because God blessed him. But at the peak of his success, there came a time when he became prideful, when he got puffed up in arrogance. And when that happened, God took him out. And he ended up being humbled. He went nuts. He ended up living out in the field with the animals. He thought he was an animal. He was eating grass from the ground until for 7 years. And then after that, he had humbled himself and God restored him to power. Now, this whole thing occurred in Daniel chapter 4. But apparently, Belshazzar hadn't really learned much from history. So Daniel tells him the story and he said, you know what? You knew about this. You saw Nebuchadnezzar. You know, how weird is it to have your grandpa eating grass in a field and then see him repent and get his kingdom back? You saw this, but you didn't learn a thing. You haven't responded in the same way. You are caught up in your pride. So that exhortation was just a free one from Daniel before he actually got to the handwriting on the wall. So he says this, and then he said, okay, so what's with this hand? And he said, well, I'll tell you what it says. And then the hand disappeared, and there was writing there. And he said, the words are, meni, meni, tekel, upharsin, which means numbered, numbered, weighed, and divided. And he says, here's the deal. Because of your pride, your days are numbered. Your number is up. You have been weighed in the balance and found wanting. And your kingdom is going to be split. You'll lose your kingdom and it'll be divided up by the Medes and the Persians, these two empires that joined together and conquered Babylon. And Belshazzar was like, oh, okay. He doesn't repent. He's just like, okay, give him the robe, give him the ring. You're third in the kingdom. Daniel's like, what? Are you even listening to me? Well, that night, as he fell asleep in a drunken stupor, the king of the Medes came in, Darius, and killed him. And the Babylonian kingdom was lost. Everything that Nebuchadnezzar had worked for, it was over. His number was up. He had crossed the line. He had been found wanting. Everything that he had worked for has now been divided. And boy, everything changed. Now, it ends up that with when the Medes and Persians took over, now they appreciated Daniel, and Daniel was given an important position back in government. He came out of retirement once Belshazzar died. So it's a good story, but the Bible tells us that every story in the Bible is there as an example to us, that there are things that we are to learn from what happened. So, I mean, one thing you learn from this certainly is if you see a hand on the wall, you might want to take notice. But one of the things that I see here, and I think it's a principle in life that we tend to deny until sometimes it seems like it's too late, but there is a point that you can cross, a line that you can cross. You can get to the point where you're getting away with stuff, and all of a sudden you find out, I just crossed a line. I don't know how, I don't know when, but all of a sudden something happened and it's like, click. Whoa, I was getting away with something and now I am being held accountable for it. And I don't know where your line is or anyone else's line is, but I can tell you, we can sit there and think that we're getting away with stuff. In fact, if things are going well in our lives, we can look at it and go, God must love me. I am being blessed because of God's approval of me. And Belshazzar could have easily thought that. Now, what he thought, the reason he's drinking a toast to these, you know, pagan, ridiculous gods is because he's like, boy, I've got life well. Look at me. I'm drinking out of another religion's holy stuff. And here's to you, gods. You guys have made me who I am. He didn't realize he was stepping across a line. And I think that we can sometimes look at our lives and draw the wrong idea about whether or not God approves of us. We can think that if we're doing well, that we must be in good standing with God. And then we can look at people who aren't doing well and go, obviously, God doesn't approve of you like he does of me because I'm doing well and you're not. In either case, that's not valid simply because God is really patient. And he let you go a long way. And you may be totally blowing it in your life and getting away with it and just think, I can keep doing this forever. It's what I've always done. It's worked well for me in the past. It's important for us to remember, when we go against what God tells us, when we just do what we want to do because we want to do it, there is a line that can be crossed. And we can never just decide that, I think I'm totally safe. You see people even who God uses in great ways, and they're doing things that are just disrespectful and dishonoring to God, and they continue to be that way, and they think, hey, God's using me, so therefore I'm special to him. And then all of a sudden, sometimes in a day, something happens, a mistake is made where they go a little too far, and boom, it's all over. The deal comes crashing down. It falls apart. And every one of us needs to realize we are not doing okay right now because we are doing good or doing well. It's God's grace that we all aren't destroyed. But we need to realize when we head in a direction, we may get to the point where all of a sudden, one day, we realize, I just went a little bit too far. And wham, my number is up. I've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. I think it's important for us to at least think of that. So what is it? What is it that causes us to say, you crossed the line? You it's time for you to realize and reckon that, you're in big trouble. Well, for him, like Nebuchadnezzar didn't get judged for stealing the holy dishes from the temple. He took them, put them in storage. God doesn't ever complain about that. But when Belshazzar takes these holy utensils and he begins to drink from them and get drunk and toast these other gods, God goes, I'm sorry, now you've gone too far. And I think one area in our lives where we can just go too far without even realizing it is, how do we handle holy things? Do we see holy things as commonplace, or do we continue to appreciate that they are special and valuable to God? This can happen in a church. When you go to church all your life, and all of a sudden church is just like anything else. I know for as a pastor, when I handle holy things every day, sometimes they can start to become commonplace. But we can all do that. We just go through the motions. We can be singing praise songs to God, but in my mind, I'm calculating something else or figuring out what am I going to do the rest of today or tomorrow or whatever. It's easy for us to lose a sense of holiness, of specialness, of things that are holy to God. Now, I'm not superstitious, for instance, about a building. But I think that one thing in our culture, where churches are now in warehouses and things like that, something is missing sometimes. You know, where that idea of growing up in a place and feeling like this is special. And I mean, this building, it's not 100 years from now, people aren't going to be coming in here in awe and going, wow, look at that. But when we go to places that are more traditional with the stained glass and everything, you do look at it and go, wow. This is something that's memorable. And those things are designed to try to depict the holiness of God. And I think that's fine. Now, after you're around it, pretty soon you're just going through the motions and it's no different. For me, this building is holy. Because I've seen things that God has done here. I can just have memories of praying with people in here and seeing God work in their lives and change them. And this building will always be precious to me. In that way. Now, we call our Bible the Holy Bible. I believe that the Bible is holy. And it's why I take it seriously. It's why I study it every day. It's why I want to, you know, teach it to you faithfully. I don't just download somebody else's sermon and preach it to you because I don't want to preach somebody else. I want to go through his word and go, here's what it says, here's what it seems to mean, because I value this book more than I value my own sense of right and wrong. And so I'll tell you if I don't know about something. And if I teach something and then I change and I go, wow, actually here's another verse that kind of disrupts that, I want to admit it. Because I am not holy, but this book is. And it's why we center our focus on it and say, what matters is what God says.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Here's what's coming up next time on The Balanced Word.
Who in my life do I value? How do I need to treat them? What in my life is precious to God? How do I value that? How much concern? God cares way more about that than he does about whether or not you do a bunch of stuff for him. And when I look at the story, it just makes me think, you know, what in my life is holy?
We'll come back to the story of the handwriting on the wall, seeking more lessons we can apply to our lives, next time on The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe. This program is listener supported and presented by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.